It's all quiet in the underground bunker. Doors closed, locks bolted. But the Great One isn't just resting on his laurels. He's making sure your weekend is even better by giving you his best. This is the best of Mark Levin.
Haiti declared an open-air prison as gang violence reaches apocalyptic levels. You haven't even heard about this in the United States, except from me. Haiti's crisis so bad that the country has now been described as an open-air prison as armed gangs continue to kill unarmed civilians. And the humanitarian crisis deep. They're murdering people right on the street. They're grabbing women and raping them. In recent weeks, the gangs have ramped up their violence as they forced Prime Minister Ariel Henry to resign. A transitional government has been formed to run the country before elections are held, but the gangs continue to cause chaos on the streets of the capital of Port-au-Prince. A UN report has outlined how more than 1,500 Haitians have died due to gang violence just in the last few months. The report adds that children are among the most impacted, often caught in crossfire, being kidnapped by gangs as they aim to raise funds for ransoms. Sexual violence has also made the streets incredibly unsafe for women. On gangs recruiting children, this is extremely alarming. The gangs have turned their violence towards people that, for whatever reasons, they see as a threat to their continued control of their territories in the country. This is what happens when a society collapses. Many in Haiti are now going without essentials, including food. Gang violence has also seen over 350,000 people displaced in their own country. Now, this is in our hemisphere. Honestly, it's right off our shores. But Biden doesn't talk enough. No, instead, it's the peaceful Palestinians. And I'm going to tell you why, because Biden is at heart a racist. That's what he is. That's what he is. It's what he's always been. But he figures he's got the black vote in his back pocket, so he doesn't have to worry about it. He figures he has most of the Jewish vote in his back pocket, and he might have both of those votes back in his back pocket. So it's the Islamist vote that he has to have. Security. There's no security. There's no rule of law left. The United Nations report said along the northern coast, gang continues to use motorboats to attack, loot, steal from residents, local businesses, humanitarian actors. Oh, it's hell on earth right now. Haiti is hell on earth. And maybe my comments and it will spark some interest by some people, but it's better to attack the Jews in Israel than I guess it is to the gangs in Haiti. So Biden's really obsessed with this transgender stuff. Really is. There's so many problems with that whole movement, particularly when it affects minors. And you're going to have minors who grow up, and some have. They're horrified by what has been done to them. And they should bring these massive lawsuits against the teachers' unions, against the Democrat Party, against the doctors and the hospitals and all the rest, against these phony nonprofit front groups. They should sue the crap out of them as if they're tobacco companies. And I'm not kidding. And they do this on Easter? Easter, you know, I'm one of the people who defend Christianity more than anybody else on the air. It's amazing. It's amazing. Because I know without Christianity in this country, people of my faith wouldn't have been able to live here in relative peace and harmony. I know that much. And to use Easter and then the talking moron at the White House, the idiot who speaks for the idiot. Look at the calendar. Okay. It's every March 31st we recognize this. Somebody did look at a calendar. And you know what they found? In a calendar, a politically correct calendar, more than any other holidays or any other days. Endless. Endless days and weeks and months celebrating transgenderism, LGBTQ. It goes on and on and on. It's like our calendars are now woke calendars. And this is all an obsession of the East Coast elites and the West Coast elites, Hollywood, New York, Washington, the middle of the country, with a vast majority of Americans, they're like, what the hell's going on, man? I mean, do what you want. Keep your hands off my kids. And I don't have to approve of it. And don't put it on my calendar. Isn't that pretty much the way to sum it up, Mr. Producer? So there's Joe Biden. It's Easter. So, you know, there's going to be a good laugh. The truth is that Joe Biden likes to hide the Easter eggs and then tries to go find the eggs that he hid. Did you know that, Mr. Producer? And I understand he couldn't. So no religious symbols on the eggs. You know, we want to keep this holiday very secular. Excuse me, it's a religious holiday. No, we're going to keep it, you know, it's like Ramadan, very secular. But Ramadan says, hey, don't challenge me. And by the way, a reporter says to him, I think one of the Fox reporters, you understand what you did here. And the reporter, what Speaker Johnson said, it was terribly inappropriate what you did. And he says, well, Speaker Johnson's not informed. Not informed about what? I didn't do it. Yes, you did, you idiot. Or maybe he didn't, but somebody did it for him, one of the Obama staffers, you know. Does anybody know what an oyster bunny is? Now, look, I don't pretend to be Christian here. I don't know what an oyster bunny is. What's an oyster bunny? Well, we're about to find out. Here's Biden. Cut one, go.
Thanks, everybody. And by the way, say hello to oyster bunnies. Come on up, bunnies. Get up here so they can see you.
He meant Easter, of course, but it turns out it's oyster. And, you know, any excuse to do this, Mr. Producer, go ahead.
What are they? Can you get a finale? The ghost track?
They have an eye.
It costs when if you they just gave you gave them.
With the withdraw, bringing U.S. home troops from home,
and the
you need somebody.
Wait, so what? Finally, what?
Budget.
But resist, we much, we must, and we will much. About that, be committed.
I'm a warrior.
You know the that it was.
Did Ted? I mean, they said that.
Look, the
lives of strip was it him?
What? I didn't.
We can walk and chew gum.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by go. You know the thing.
True and international effort to pressure.
Been impeached for inciting the erection.
Donald John Trump incited the erection. Insurrection.
And what am I doing here? I'm going to lose track here. And
to confidence in the integrity.
Economic.
No! Don't let him.
You know how much I'm going to do with the deficit this year?
Bridges and those bonds that are collapsing.
And you know it is.
Happy birthday, dear Valerie.
Part of some of you to some of the leadership of.
Kajan, Katanji drowned Jackson.
You docs are good. If there's any angels in heaven, they're all nurses, male and female.
God save the queen, man.
President Trump incited an erection.
Mess with the men on the
beer brewed here. It is used to make the brew beer in this final. Oh, Earth Rider, thanks for the Great Lakes. I wonder why.
Participated in an erection.
Say hello to oyster bunnies. Come on up, bunnies.
All Democrats, all liberals, all Washington, a little Hollywood. That's your ruling class, America. Now, it gets worse. White House pushed Trans Day messaging on English accounts, but not the Spanish speakers. Say what? The Biden White House, post-millennial writing, social media account La Casa Blanca did not post anything related to Transgender Day of Visibility, quote unquote, while the English White House account on X made a post on Easter to declare the LGBTQ recognition date. Let me get this straight. It did it on the English account, not on the Spanish account. They're stereotyping, but this is what I mean. The guy is a racist. His people are racists. They figure, you know, Spanish are more conservative, they're Catholic, so we can't do that. But the whites, you know, what the hell? And not just whites, blacks, whoever speaks just English and not bilingual. Over the weekend, the Biden administration faced backlash for using a proclamation for March 31 as Transgender Day of Visibility. Can I ask a question? No, I better not. When the holiest Christian holiday, Easter Sunday, fell on the same day, a proclamation for Biden was issued about March 31 on Good Friday that read, "By virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, do hereby proclaim March 31, 2024 as Transgender Day of Visibility." Now, just to get my English straight, Mr. Producer, can't transgendered people see? Transgender Day of Visibility? Transgender people. I didn't know they had a sight problem. The day was established in 2009, and Biden has proclaimed it repeatedly during his administration. On Easter Sunday, Biden's social media accounts made several different posts about both Easter and Transgender Day of Visibility. One account that was lacking any posts related to LGBTQ holiday, however, was the Spanish iteration of the White House account, La Casa Blanca. The posts that were issued for the Spanish White House account only celebrated Easter and Cesar Chavez. Now, why were they celebrating Cesar Chavez? So many celebrations. How did I miss them all? Now, of course, ladies and gentlemen, Cesar Chavez, I wrote about it, and we've talked about it here over the years. Excuse me. Cesar Chavez went down to the southern border with his newly minted union members, Farm Workers Union, with Walter Mondale, with Ralph Abernathy, who had been the right hand of Martin Luther King, with Eugene McCarthy. And they went down there and they talked about, quote unquote, wetbacks coming across the border. Cesar Chavez used the term wetbacks. We played it. He said it on a San Francisco radio show. We have that, but why bother right now? Remember that, Mr. Producer? And they supported and defended all efforts to secure the border and throw all illegal aliens out of the country because he was trying to unionize Hispanic workers. American citizen Hispanic workers. Today, of course, they celebrate him, but they don't know what he stood for. He was opposed to massive migration, legal, and was opposed to illegal immigration completely. And he saw it as a way of the government to undermine his workers' movement. Not today. And so they're celebrating Cesar Chavez. I remember Obama had a small statue, I think, a bust of Cesar Chavez in his office, because they're stupid. They don't even know what the hell they're doing. It doesn't matter. They're rewriting history. In contrast, the English White House account on X made an Easter post similar to the Spanish post. However, the other post on March 31 stated, "Transgender Americans are part of the fabric of our nation. On Transgender Day of Visibility," again, apparently transgender people can't see very well, "our administration honors the extraordinary courage of the transgender," and so forth and so on. The extraordinary courage. You see, America is such an awful country. You know, my view is live and let live. It really is. Just leave me alone. Don't tell me what to think. Don't tell me what to do. Get your finger the hell out of my face. Stop changing my calendars. Don't brainwash my children. Do whatever the hell you want to do, as long as it doesn't break the law or interfere with me. Transgender Day of visibility, extraordinary courage. I don't think we treat the men and women who returned from war this way and talk about their extraordinary courage. And so courageous are they that Joe Biden wouldn't even note their courage on an official White House Spanish website. We really acknowledge your courage. The day of Transgender Day of Visibility, except on the White House Spanish language site. No visibility, no courage.
Mark Levin.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in America with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, much, much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. My wife Julie and I decided it was time to add more flowering trees to our landscape, and Fast Growing Tree was a great resource for us. A large selection and no hassle ordering or shipping. This spring they have the best deals online, up to half off on selected plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code Levin at checkout. L-E-V-I-N. Now that's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code Levin. Levin at checkout. FastGrowingTrees.com, code L-E-V-I-N. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Please visit FastGrowingTrees.com for details.
Making your weekend even better. This is the best of Mark Levin.
I don't know. I'm getting into kind of the Joe Biden gibberish mode. Now, this is very serious. These gag orders being issued by these judges, as discussed last week, against Donald Trump are outrageously unconstitutional. They just want to shut him down. He's in the middle of a presidential campaign. I talked about this so-called judge, Reggie Walton, and I believe that ethics complaints should be filed against him. What he did was grotesque on CNN. All CNN is really a beehive of poison, cancer, and other forms of reprobates. But I'm going to read this to you. This is the judge's daughter who's handling this Manhattan case involving this guy Bragg. His name is Judge Merchant. The daughter of the judge, writes Red State, Brittany Sheehan, presiding over Donald Trump's New York hush money trial. It's a non-disclosure agreement trial. Has two significant Democratic clients who have raised over $93 million in campaign donations by fundraising off the criminal case. You aware of this, folks? These clients, Representative Adam Schiff and the Senate Majority PAC, I believe that's Schumer's, are clients of Authentic Campaigns, a Chicago-based progressive political consulting firm with Lauren Merchant. The daughter of Manhattan Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchant is president. Okay, you got that? So the judge's daughter is a massive Democrat political left-wing operative. Her group has raised over $93 million in campaign donations, fundraising off the case that her father is in charge of. In August, Judge Merchant rejected Trump's first recusal motion, but Trump spokesman Steve Chung says the evidence of bias is even clearer now, telling the New York Post Authentic Campaigns, and thus the judge's daughter, is actively making money from this sham attack against President Trump, rendering Judge Merchant conflicted out. 100%. 100%. Adam Schiff's Senate campaign has garnered a staggering $20 million in donations since it started seeking contributions based on Trump's 34-count indictment last April in the case that the daughter's father is the judge in. Now, Schiff's fundraising email reads as follows. And, of course, this daughter is involved in all this. It is a sober moment and unprecedented for a former president to be indicted, but his alleged offenses are also unprecedented. Trump will respond as he always does, playing the victim and blaming others for having the temerity to investigate him in the first place. Schiff is worse than what you find on the bottom of your shoe if you happen to step in the wrong place. The Senate Majority PAC, a super PAC linked to Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, it's his PAC, has received, ready, $73.6 million in donations since it began sending out fundraising emails following Trump's indictment. So the judge's daughter is raising millions off of this. The PAC sent an email that said, breaking news, Donald Trump indicted by Manhattan grand jury. This is an important moment for our democracy. But our work isn't over. We must continue protecting our Senate majority from GOP extremists. Please rush $10, become $60 to help defend the Senate. The super PAC is engaged in transactions exceeding $15 million with Authentic since 2019. The super PAC being Schumer's PAC, which includes, you see how it works here? You have a Democrat-elected judge. His daughter is a massive Democrat left-wing radical fundraiser, raising funds off the trial that the father is overseeing for Schumer's PAC and Adam Schiff's campaign. And Trump has been attacking the father and the daughter over this, and so he issues a gag order. And you have a federal judge in Washington, D.C., Reggie Walton, who goes on CNN and whines and complains and attacks Trump. All, of course, giving a pass to Schumer and all the other clowns. Lauren Michon, who previously worked as the director of digital persuasion for Vice President Kamala Harris's 2020 presidential campaign, has expressed her father's disapproval of politicians using Twitter, citing Trump as an example. The judge's daughter, in a 2019 podcast appearance, said the following. I've actually had a couple conversations with my dad, the judge, recently, where he's kind of like, I hate that politicians use Twitter, and like, it's so unprofessional, and you know, that's not how a politician should behave themselves. She can't speak English either. And I explained that, like, yeah, I think there are a lot of instances where it is not used in, like, when our president, meaning Trump, tweets anything that he thinks, like, that's not what he should be using it for. So Trump took aim at Michon and his conflicts of interest in several social media posts made this week. Now, if we had a real media, they'd be demanding this guy's recusal. This is a contemptible outrage, just like the judge, so-called Judge Walton, the other day. And then if you're a judge, it actually shoots straight, plays by the book. You come under vicious attack at CNN, MSNBC, and the other left-wing media outlets. And so this was what we have now from Reuters. Reuters is one of the worst. Federal judge overseeing the criminal case that accuses Donald Trump of mishandling classified documents has signaled an openness to the former president's defense claims in a sign that prosecutors might face a difficult road. U.S. District Court Judge Eileen Cannon, who was nominated to the bench by Trump. Okay. Nominated to the bench by Trump. So when we get to these Supreme Court decisions, are they going to keep mentioning the Democrats were nominated by Biden and Clinton and Obama? No. But that must be her middle name. Judge Eileen, nominated by Trump, Cannon, has asked Trump and prosecutors to propose jury instructions based on two legal scenarios that favor a claim from Trump. Let's see here. A claim from Trump, Dan Printer. Anyway, here's where it is. The dispute in another... Trump and Special Counsel Jack Smith, who brought the case, face a Tuesday deadline to respond. She has asked Trump and prosecutors to propose jury instructions based on two legal scenarios that favor a claim from Trump that national security lawyers say have little relevance to the charges. Again, you notice how this is written? So what they're going to do in the body of this, they're going to bring in national security so-called experts who agree that the judge is wrong. Now, understand a few things. This is another case of first impression. No former president has ever been charged with violations of the Espionage Act. No former vice president has. No former secretary of state has. No former senator has. You have a court who is more favorable to the views of one party versus the other, and you're seeing orders and decisions that are reflective of that, said Brandon Vat Grack, a former Justice Department national security official. Why did they pick him? I worked at the Department of Justice. There's many national security officials we had there. They picked him because they knew his answer, because he's an a-hole. Trump has pleaded not guilty to charges accusing him of knowingly retaining blah, blah, blah. At issue is Cannon's recent order and Trump's claim that he treated the documents as personal under a 1978 law. That's the Presidential Records Act. Now, nowhere in this article is the ruling by an Obama judge in Washington, D.C., in the Clinton case against Judicial Watch, in which they were raising issues about that classified stuff that was in Bill Clinton's sock drawer. By the way, Mr., do you have a whole drawer committed to socks? It's a hell of a lot of socks, isn't it? I mean, you got socks, right? You got T-shirts in there. You may have your underwear. A sock drawer? A whole drawer filled with... I'm just wondering. It's a whole other story. I'm not going to get into that. Mark Zaid, a defense lawyer who's worked on cases involving classified information. Yeah, I've had... You know, we've crossed swords. Said he's unaware of an instance when a document produced by a federal agency was declared a personal record by a president. And tell me, Mark, being a defense lawyer and all that, are you aware of any case where a former president was a defendant? You'd say, I'm not aware of any case where a president has declared a classified document or a federal agency has declared personal record by a president. There'd be no circumstances other than this one, you moron. Allowing a jury to consider these claims would give Trump a fighting chance in a jury trial that would never likely exist in another case. This is a one-off case. This is the only case of its kind in American history. It's a one-off case. That's why you've never heard of it, you schmuck. That's why. Could you imagine if I had a full-time podcast, Mr. Producer? My hands wouldn't be tied. And then they go on, Cannon has escaped the ire of Trump, and, you know, then they get in their innuendos and so forth. So the media are all in for the prosecution. Now, if we're talking about a mass murder, illegal alien, and you want the book thrown at him, you'd be called all kinds of names. Oh, obviously you're racist. What's wrong with you? But here in the case where the judge is actually taking these issues seriously, there's motions being filed, she's not predetermining anything. This is a case of first impression, as we lawyers call it. You've got serious constitutional issues, including a filing by Landmark Legal Foundation that this prosecutor has been unconstitutionally appointed. The judge is going to have to struggle with that, too, because he has been. We have an appointments clause. We also understand delegation. But you can't delegate prosecutorial authority to an individual who's not part of the federal bureaucracy, that is, the federal government, without going through the appointments clause. You can delegate it to, say, a U.S. attorney because they already went through the confirmation process. But you can't delegate it to somebody who's never gone through the confirmation process and has never been, and at the time of the appointment is not part of the federal government. Otherwise, what's the point of the appointments clause? And it's right there. It's called the appointments clause of the Constitution. I wonder what Mark Zaid thinks about that one.
Mark Levin. Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
You're listening to the best of Mark Levin.
Folks, I want you to bear with me. I want to demonstrate to you why I've been talking for months and why I'm explaining that this administration is an anti-American administration from sea to shining sea, with open borders, with its war on people of faith, with its war on parents. It is utterly rogue and out of control, and it is filled with filthy, lying, left-wing scum. And others who will do anything they can on behalf of and for this administration. This hatred for Israel is a reflection of their hatred for America. Israel shares our values, our faiths, in the middle of a hellhole filled with terrorists who want to slaughter them and slaughter us. Now, there was an accidental bombing that took place in Gaza. And apparently, the Israelis accidentally hit a location where there are quote-unquote workers, I guess humanitarian workers, people who are trying to feed the Gazans. And immediately, the Israelis apologized, said it was an error. Unfortunately, war has these problems and so forth. So here you have an ally, supposedly the United States, who has seized on this. Seized on it. From the Secretary of State to John Kirby today at his briefing to viciously, viciously attack the state of Israel. And I want to play some of this for you, but before I do, I want to read something to you to remind you about it. Less than two years ago, CBS News, a U.S. drone strike killed an aid worker in Afghanistan, many of his family and colleagues still stranded there. It killed 10 civilians. You remember that, Mr. Producer? They sent a drone to get a terrorist, and instead, they killed 10 civilians. Seven of them were children in Afghanistan. It was the last act of our military under Biden. A U.S. airstrike in the final days of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan intended for an ISIS-K terrorist instead killed the aid worker, Zamar Ahmadi, and members of his family. After initially calling it a righteous strike and claiming no civilians were killed, the Pentagon admitted its mistake and promised to resettle members of Ahmadi's family and employees of the aid organization he worked for. This was an aid organization trying to help the people who were starving, who were hungry, who had been abused by the Taliban. They order a drone strike that kills the person in charge of the aid organization and his family, seven of whom were children. Seven of whom were children. So we know from our own experience, certainly Blinken does in the Biden administration, that mistakes happen in war. It's a war zone. But now I want you to listen to John Kirby today. And what I find contemptible, there's not a single news organization in America, not one, that has pointed this out today. Not one. Here's John Kirby at the White House today. Cut three, go.
We were outraged to learn of an IDF strike that killed a number of civilian humanitarian workers yesterday from the World Central Kitchen, which has been relentless in working to get food to those who are hungry in Gaza and, quite frankly, around the world. We send our deepest condolences to their families and loved ones. We've seen the comments from Prime Minister Netanyahu and from the Israeli Defense Forces about their commitment to conduct an investigation. As we understand it, a preliminary investigation has been completed today and presented to the Army Chief of Staff, and we'll obviously look to see what they discover in this preliminary one. But we expect the broader investigation to be conducted and to be done so in a swift and comprehensive manner. We hope that those findings will be made public and that there is appropriate accountability held.
Mm-hmm. Hamas is slaughtering civilians as I speak, Palestinian civilians all through the Middle East. Haiti's on fire. Millions and millions of people being slaughtered, raped, butchered. But the White House spokesman is focused on this. It's an opportunity to exploit, to undermine, and to attack the state of Israel. Obviously, this was a mistake. But Blinken even goes further. Blinken, who John McCain said is a very dangerous man. Blinken attacks Israel more for an accident than he does Iran for its surrogates killing three American soldiers. I want you to listen to this from our Secretary of State. Cut one, go.
But it is, simply put, insufficient. It is not enough to meet the needs of the children, the women, the men in Gaza who remain caught in a horrific crossfire of Hamas's making. So in our conversations with the Israeli government, including just last week when the defense minister was in Washington, and just yesterday when we were on a video conference with Israeli counterparts, we impressed again upon them the imperative of now surging and sustaining assistance, and not only getting it into Gaza, but within Gaza, getting it to everyone who needs it, including in the north, where, as you know, the conditions are the most challenged.
So he wants to turn the Israeli army into the Red Cross. While Hamas is still there with thousands of terrorists, they're getting weapons from Iran through Syria. He knows all this. They place no obligation on the enemy, our enemy, the terrorists who've attacked the United States. And now the Israeli soldiers need to be delivering food and water and so forth and so on throughout Gaza. Not a word there. Not a word about Hamas's responsibility or their buddy Qatar, the buddy meaning Blinken's, who funds all this. No effort to stop any funding of Iran by the United States government. Funding of UNRWA. Oh, yes, yes, U.S. isn't funding it, but they're asking European countries to fund it. And so the Israelis are here, so wait a minute. We got to get this war over with. They only have so many troops, ladies and gentlemen. It's a very small army and a very small population. But it gets worse. He's not done. Notice he never holds a press conference and condemns Iran or North Korea or China and so forth. Notice he doesn't hold a press conference about what Hezbollah is doing. No words to Hamas about slaughtering their own people. But it gets worse. Cut two, go.
The victims of yesterday's strike join a record number of humanitarian workers who've been killed in this particular conflict. These people are heroes. They run into the fire, not away from it. They show the best of what humanity has to offer when the going really gets tough. They have to be protected. We shouldn't have a situation where people who are simply trying to help their fellow human beings are themselves at grave risk.
So his implication there is the Israelis are killing them. Listen to the ambiguity also. What about Hamas? And why would the Israelis want to kill humanitarian workers? So the United States can keep trashing them? That is Israel? Let me be clear. If Israel wanted to blow Gaza off the face of the earth, and it does not, and it will not, it could. Putin keeps threatening that that's what he would do to his enemies. Iran threatens when it gets the weapon, it will. North Korea threatens. Israel does not. Israel's the only country in the Middle East that has that capacity. And there have been experts on and on. This gentleman, Spencer, who will be on my show on Saturday, from West Point, an expert on military strategy, says the Israeli army, the IDF, has conducted itself like no other army on the face of the earth in the history of mankind. None. Go ahead.
We've spoken directly to the Israeli government about this particular incident. We've urged a swift, a thorough, and impartial investigation to understand.
They don't need you to tell them that. They've already started one. They already did. And so now this is drama. So now he's coming out. He's making these statements. More people are being slaughtered on our southern border tonight than were killed in this terrible accident, effectively. More people are being slaughtered in 5 minutes in most of the rest of the world than here. The Israelis said it was an accident. They take responsibility for it. Then he blames them for all these other horrors in Gaza when it comes to these workers and so forth. We know Hamas is a terrorist organization. We know Israel is not. And this is the sort of stuff that is spreading anti-Semitism in our own country, Jew hatred in our own country, by Blinken, by Kirby. And it's getting worse and worse and worse, and we, the people in this country, are going to pay the price for this. Now he has positioned this accident as Israelis not wanting to give food and aid to the Gazans, as too many humanitarian workers being killed, presumably he's implying by Israel, which is nonsense. No pressure on Egypt to open its border. None. None. Let's go on.
And as we have throughout this conflict, we've impressed upon the Israelis the absolute imperative of doing more to protect innocent civilian lives, be they Palestinian children, women, and men, or be they aid workers, as well as to get more humanitarian assistance to more people more effectively.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. The man that handed Afghanistan over to the Taliban, Blinken. The man who was dealing with Iran, selling out our country, and Iran will have nukes that we pay for. This one incident, sad, terrible incident of seven workers, aid workers being killed, is now front and center for the Biden administration, Blinken, and this loudmouth Kirby. It's as if Hamas has written the script. But not a single reporter, tonight as I speak, or during the day, and I posted this, says to Mr. Blinken or Mr. Kirby, can I ask you a question? Less than 2 years ago, you guys ordered a drone strike on what you said was a terrorist. You celebrated it. You said it was a righteous strike, quote unquote. Then it turns out that you hit the head of a major aid organization and killed his entire family, seven of whom are children. So can't you understand that in war, as horrible as these things happen, they're impossible to completely prevent? Given your record, Mr. Kirby, given Mr. Biden's record and Mr. Blinken's record and Mr. Austin's record, So tell me something, America. Why hasn't a single reporter asked the question? Why hasn't a single reporter answered the question? The U.S. government has resettled 11 of the 144 individuals who were affected by the drone strike. 11 out of the 144 as of August 2022. And the others are represented by the ACLU. They're representing Ahmadi's family members.
Mark Levin.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
The Great One makes your weekend even better. This is the best of Mark Levin.
I'm going to discuss something nobody discusses. A million simulations show that the debt in the United States is on an unsustainable path. U.S. national debt is on unsustainable course, simulations show. This is Fox Business. Wow. What does all that mean? What does that mean, unsustainable path? Well, what it means is we're going to have a depression. Inflation, stagnation, then inflation. Now, let's dig into this. The United States is almost certainly on an unsustainable path with regard to the astronomic rise in its national debt, according to a million simulations run by Bloomberg. A million computer simulations. Wow. Bloomberg reported that it conducted a million simulations on the U.S. debt outlook and found 88% of them borrowing is on an unsustainable path. And the findings come after a forecast by the Congressional Budget Office that indicates the national debt will grow to an astounding $54 trillion in the next decade, next 10 years. It's at $34 trillion right now. The result of an aging population, rising federal health care costs, that's not why. Because these politicians spend like drunken Marxists. That's why. Payments are expected to triple from nearly $475 billion in fiscal 2022 to a stunning $1.4 trillion in 2032. That's interest. That's payment for interest. In 8 years, $1.4 trillion. By 2053... 30 years from now, the interest payments are projected to surge to $5.4 trillion. To put it into perspective, that'll be more than the U.S. spends on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and all other mandatory and discretionary spending programs combined. Combined. When factoring in the market's current outlook and interest rates, the debt-to-GDP ratio is expected to rise to 123% in 2034. Now, what does that mean? The debt to all the gross domestic product, that is, all goods and services produced, the debt-to-GDP ratio means for every dollar that we produce in this country, we will owe the government $1.23 in 8 years. And yet, they write, that's a fairly optimistic outlook, given the assumption in Washington that the sweeping tax law passed in 2017 by former President Trump will likely be extended. Notice how they always twist it. Notice the problem is always that they don't tax us enough and you don't get to keep enough of your money. The problem is that they spend too damn much. Now, in a higher simulation scenario, the debt-to-GDP burden could be as high as 134% in 2034, 185% in 2050. So that would mean in 26 short years, for every dollar that we the people produce in goods and services, we will owe the government $1.85. Should the debt materialize, it could risk America's economic standing in the world. Are they out of their minds? Should the debt materialize, you're going to need a wheelbarrow to move your money around. I'd like to always take these issues deeper. We sit here, we wring our hands, we shake our heads, and then I say to myself, but do the majority of the American people, but certainly a majority of the ruling class does not, do they really give a damn about anything but today? Bernie Sanders, that's all he's about. Joe Biden, that's all they're about. What about tomorrow? What about our kids and grandkids and generations yet born? So I raise this question. You may have heard of this book, Plunder and Deceit, when I wrote this many years ago. Can we simultaneously love our children but betray their generation and generations yet born? Because that's what we're doing. Among the least acknowledged facts of American modernity is the extent to which parents, acting in their familial capacity, naturally and tenaciously guard their young children from threat and peril, to the point of risking their own physical and economic security in extreme cases. However, as part of the political and governing community, in other words, as the aggregate, that is, the ruling generation is what I call it, many of these same parents wittingly and unwittingly join with other parents in tolerating, if not enthusiastically championing, disadvantageous and even grievous public policies that jeopardize not only their children's future, but the welfare of successive generations. This is why I cannot stand the left. I cannot stand them because this is what they're doing. To be clear, not all parental decisions are impactful or consequential in the lives of children. Obviously, not all decisions are equal. Indeed, the most attentive and nurturing parents are not and cannot be conscious of every decision they make, in as much as the totality of such decisions is likely incalculable, even on a weekly or monthly basis. And in the healthiest families, the most considered parental decisions based on seemingly prudential judgments can and do produce unintended consequences. Of course, the same can be said of decisions about public policy and governing in a relatively well-functioning community. But there are accepted norms of behavior, a moral order, born of experience and knowledge, instinct and faith, teaching and reason, and love and passion, that provide definition for and boundaries between right and wrong, good and evil, and fairness and injustice, applicable to families and societies alike. Hence, a harmony of virtuous interest informed by tried and true traditions, customs, values, and institutions and cultivated within families and the larger community preserves and improves the human condition, one individual at a time, one generation to the next. Broadly speaking, this is called the civil society. The civil society. Edmund Burke, a political thinker, was born in Ireland and moved to England, where he became a prominent statesman in the 18th century. He explained that the civil society relies on an intergenerational continuum of the past, the living, and the unborn. He wrote that, as the end of such a partnership cannot be obtained in many generations, it becomes a partnership not only between those who are living, but between those who are dead and those who are yet to be born. In fact, Burke went further, warning that those who forsake this intergenerational continuum condemn themselves, their children, and future generations to a grim existence. He said, one of the first and most leading principles on which the Commonwealth and the laws are consecrated is lest the temporary possessors and life renters in it, unmindful of what they have received from their ancestors or what is due to their posterity, should act as if they were the entire masters, that they should not think it among their rights to cut off the entail or commit waste on the inheritance by destroying at their pleasure the whole original fabric of society, hazarding to leave to those who come after them a ruin instead of a habitation, and teaching these successors as little to respect their contrivances as they had themselves respected the institutions of their forefathers. Genius, absolute genius. And this is what's happening in America. History confirms Burke's observation. To embrace the moral order as parents nurturing their children, yet to abandon the moral order as members of the ruling generation, thereby contributing to predictably deleterious public policies with prospectively calamitous outcomes, is a decadence that leads to unstable and potentially oppressive or even tyrannical conditions, which in the end degrade and dissemble the civil society and consume their children's generation and generations beyond. Reformation and recovery may be possible, but difficult and complicated, and typically only after the exaction of an enormous human toll. Tell me, how many people write like this? I'm just saying, Mr. Medusa. I'm in a different world, a different mindset when I sit down and write. I just am. Burke's commentary was motivated by his reflections on the decade-long French Revolution, its revulsion at the anarchy and horror it unleashed. And in the ensuing more than two centuries, and up to this very moment, the world has witnessed much worse. This is not to say that all instances of civil and societal dislocation take the form of bloody revolution or civil war. Obviously, there are varying pathologies peculiar to particular doctrines, cultures, governing systems, and so on. There are also differing events and circumstances, some building over time and others descending more abruptly, that contribute to the character of the discontinuity. But violence is the ultimate exposure. Violence is the ultimate exposure. When an economy collapses, you had a little taste of it during the pandemic. The culture, the society follow. I can't think of a single instance in where that wasn't the case, even in our country. The Great Depression, our country changed forever, and for the worse. Before Burke, Charles de Montesquieu, a French philosopher whose life predated the American Revolution, but who was hugely influential in the Constitution's framers. He also wrote of the disastrous aftermath of the civil society's abandonment. He explained, when that virtue ceases, this is important, folks, when that virtue ceases, ambition enters those hearts that can admit it, and avarice enters them all. Desires change their objects. That which one used to love, one loves no longer. One was free under the laws, one wants to be free against them. Each citizen is like a slave who has escaped from his master's house. What was a maxim is now called severity. What was a rule is now called constraint. What was vigilance is now called fear. There, frugality, not the desire to possess, is avarice. Formerly, the goods of individuals made up the public treasury. The public treasury has now become the patrimony of individuals. The republic is a cast-off husk, and its strength is no more than the power of a few citizens and the license of all. This was written in the 1600s. In modern America, the unraveling of the civil society had been subtly persistent, but is now intensifying. Evidence of rising utopian statism, the allure of political demagogues and self-appointed masterminds peddling abstractions and fantasies in pursuit of a non-existent paradisiacal society, and the concomitant accretion of governmental power in an increasingly authoritarian and centralized federal leviathan abounds. The ruling generation's governing policies are already forecast to diminish the quality of life of future generations. Among other things, witness the massive welfare and entitlement state, which is concurrently expanding and imploding, and the brazen abandonment of constitutional firewalls and governing limitations. If not appropriately and expeditiously ameliorated, the effects will be dire, and the ruling generation knows it. That is, we know it. But we don't give a damn. We won't be around. What about our kids? Which takes us back to the beginning of what I read to you. What about our kids? Don't we care about them? Our kids, our grandkids, maybe the next generation after that. We can't be certain. It's not science. What are we doing to them? What's going to happen to them? Now, I wrote this in 2015. I wrote this 9 years ago. And I dedicated the book to my beloved family, fellow countrymen, and future generations. What do you think is going to happen 25 years ago when I'm gone and people read this book about what's happening in the country? So we come full circle here to this Bloomberg report. And no matter how they ran their computer model, and they ran it over and over and over and over again. Indeed, they ran it a million simulations. It found that what we are doing to ourselves is unsustainable. And so the mantra that they're going to shut down the government will look awfully quaint and stupid when the entire economy collapses. Because we didn't shut down the government.
Mark Levin.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
We're giving you nothing but the best of Mark Levin.
I have to admit to you, I'm beyond furious this evening. 80% of the American people support Israel. They support their efforts to defeat Hamas. Almost 90% of the Palestinians support Hamas and the slaughter of October 7th. A majority of young Democrats support Hamas. And the Biden administration supports Hamas. And it will not allow the Israelis to destroy it. That is the bottom line, all the static aside. Joe Biden has sold out to Iran because, in my view, Iran is withholding its nuclear breakout till after the election. Joe Biden paid the Iranians $6 billion for hostages. Joe Biden has allowed to flow into Iran over $100 billion, more money than has been sent to Ukraine. Iran killed three American, red-blooded American soldiers, and they didn't pay any price for it. None. You don't know this, but every day and every night, hundreds of missiles are being fired into Israel from Lebanon by Hezbollah. So even if Israel were to surrender to Hamas, who's going to stop that? Ladies and gentlemen, 76 years ago, Harry Truman recognized the state of Israel. And since then, Republican and Democrat administrations alike have supported that alliance without fail. Began to weaken under Obama, but even Obama dare not do what Biden is doing. And almost 6 months to the day after October 7th, here we are on October 4th, mark this date down in your calendar, That 76-year bond has been destroyed. Joe Biden is the only president since Truman forward to destroy that bond. People say, well, why is Israel any of our business? If Israel didn't exist, who do you think the target would be? The Iranians want to kill Secretary Pompeo, John Bolton, and others, and they've attempted to. The Iranians actually have a foothold in our hemisphere now, in Central America. Why? Because of Israel? Iran is building nuclear weapons on intercontinental ballistic missiles, intercontinental, to reach the United States. The Houthis are attacking American ships in the Red Sea. Iran has a ironclad alliance with China. It's providing China with oil that Donald Trump had cut off. It's providing Russia with drones. And there is an axis of evil with Iran, North Korea, Russia, and China. That's not an axis of evil against Israel. It's an axis of evil against us. How many more allies are we going to throw under the bus while our enemies get stronger and stronger and build better and better alliances? And how many more countries are going to want to be aligned with the United States under these circumstances? The most horrific things are now being said today, prior days, but today especially. Like a chorus of Jew-hating, anti-Semitic, Israel-hating Democrats. And let me be clear. This is the Democrat Party. This is the Democrat Party. Anthony Blinken is one of the most loathsome stomach crawlers on the face of the planet. And I want to remind everybody that it was Biden who ordered the drone attack. They killed an aid worker in Afghanistan and then 9 of his family members, 10 of them, including 7 children. And when that took place, he went to Rehoboth Beach. He didn't apologize. He didn't bend over backwards. Nobody said that better never happen again. And he unleashed holy hell as we were surrendering in Afghanistan. 13 U.S. servicemen murdered. God knows how many Americans are still there, if they're even alive. He doesn't care about human life. When Obama was president of the United States, he used drone attacks left and right. He was condemned by it, by human rights groups and leftists. And under the Obama-Biden administration, upwards of 800 civilians died as a result of drone attacks, including 3 American citizens. Nobody blamed the United States military. Nobody blamed Obama specifically. Nobody said this better never happen again. That attack in Yemen. Multiple drones were launched. And they hit a 3 or 4 car procession and blew them off the face of the earth. Our intel said that those were terrorists in there. But they weren't terrorists. It was a wedding party. A wedding party. And 27 innocent civilians in Yemen were killed. 27. In one attack. Did the Israelis or any of our allies get up and talk about the inhumanity of the United States? Did they? Where's the data? How many civilians in Gaza have been killed by Hamas? I'm looking. There's none. They don't provide any. How many aid workers have been killed by Hamas? We don't have any data. Biden and Blinken know that about 70% of the aid that goes into Gaza winds up with Hamas. Egypt won't open its borders so that people can leave and go into the Sinai Peninsula. And Iran keeps funneling weapons to Hamas. And Biden today demands a ceasefire. Because the river to the sea crowd, the river to the sea crowd in the United States demands a ceasefire, which means Israel will surrender the way we surrendered in Afghanistan, but the result will be far worse than even what took place in Afghanistan. A ceasefire. When Hamas's top officials and the last four battalions are surrounded, a ceasefire. Look at all the incoming Israel's taking from the United States and from our media and the Democrat Party. Jake Tapper is a slime ball in the worst order. Dana Bash is a puke. Wolf Blitzer is a serial liar. Joe Scarborough has become a loathsome anti-Semite. The media are all in. Many of us have asked ourselves over the decades, how could a so-called civilized society like Germany, how could the people succumb to the hate? How could they succumb to the violence? Now, we're not the Third Reich, obviously. But we're not America before Joe Biden either. America's changing, not you and me. America is changing. It's not from the bottom up and the middle out. 80% of the American people support Israel. It's from the top down. It's from our government. It's from the State Department, the Defense Department, the CIA, and most of all from the White House. They're changing the direction of our country. And the stench of the 1930s is out there. The little Kristallnachts are taking place all over the United States. You have to actually go on the internet and read about it. They're not being reported on cable or network news. Synagogues, Jewish students, it's still going on. And when Biden speaks as he speaks, and this flunky Kirby speaks as he speaks, and this dangerous, good-for-nothing ideologue, this Iranian special pleader, Blinken, says the horrendous things that he says, they are fueling anti-Semitism, not just throughout the United States, but throughout the world. And they are giving aid and comfort to the Islamo-Nazi regime in Tehran. They're giving aid and comfort to Hamas and Hezbollah and the PLO and every damn terrorist organization on the face of the earth. That's what this administration is doing. They are taking hundreds of years built up in America of our moral superiority, that's right, of our moral strength, of our principles, and they're burning them to the ground. One administration, whether it's the border, whether it's trying to imprison Donald Trump, and now they're targeting the state of Israel. They are doing more damage to the state of Israel than Iran is doing today. I want you to listen to this. This is Antony Blinken at a news conference. It's not just any news conference. He's in Brussels, Belgium, with our NATO allies. And I want you to hear what he says in front of them and to the entire world. Cut 22, go.
Now, of course, what happened after October 7th could have ended immediately if Hamas had stopped hiding behind civilians, released the hostages, and put down its weapons.
This is a throwaway line. because Hamas is held to no standard whatsoever. And oddly enough, this guy's so sick, he says, because they're terrorists, we don't have to hold them to a standard. Excuse me? We don't expect anything from them. What? They're holding five American citizens, you bonehead. Go ahead.
But Israel is not Hamas. Israel is a democracy. Hamas, a terrorist organization. And democracies place the highest value on human life. Every human life.
That's not correct. This man is unfamiliar with World War II. He's unfamiliar with the Civil War. He's unfamiliar with World War I. He's unfamiliar with the Vietnam War. When you have an enemy, you're not sitting there thinking about human life. You must destroy your enemy. Your enemy is weaponized. Your enemy has attacked your own people. Your enemy is seeking to destroy. Look at the moral equivalence. He's creating a moral equivalence between free nations and the terrorists. He says, but we're not the terrorists like them. We care about every life. No, we don't. We want every terrorist rubbed out, removed from the face of the earth because they threaten us. We want criminals. We want them put in prison. Why? Because they threaten us. Go ahead.
It's been said, whoever saves a life saves the entire world.
What a stupid ass. Go ahead.
Our strength. It's what distinguishes us from terrorists, like Hamas. If we lose that reverence for human life,
good Lord,
we risk becoming indistinguishable from those we confront.
Well, then you're a terrorist, because you're funding Iran, you're funding Hamas, you're funding the Houthis, you're funding the PLO, you're funding Hezbollah. Then you, sir, are a terrorist, even worse. Through your policies in funding Iran, you're funding China with oil. They have 2.5 million Muslim Uyghurs in prison camps. You're responsible for that, you jerk. You're responsible for every death in Afghanistan as a result of what you did. And when you were Deputy Secretary of State, you were responsible for 800 civilian deaths as a result of drone attacks. So I guess you're the terrorist.